Yeah, what's up, everybody, to the All Access .net countdown. For those of you who haven't listened to one of these before, basically what this show is Jake and I talking about the top five best and bottom three worst moments of the week. We say moments because sometimes it's a match, sometimes it's an angle, sometimes, you know, sometimes it's a series of things that happen on a show that create a great moment. So we kind of leave it open-ended for ourselves, and we try and do more best than worst, mostly because we want this to be a positive show. Jake and I like wrestling, and we want to say nice things about wrestling more than we say bad things about wrestling. Anything else to sum up what we do on the show, Jake?
You know, we online wrestling commentary kind of gets kind of gets typecast as just a bunch of you know, basement dwellers, you know, complaining about something that's, you know, targeted at kids. And, you know, I guess we try to focus on the positive merely because, you know, you want to beat that rap somewhat. And at the same time, you know, you have to realize that there probably is more positive things to say about wrestling in a week than negative. But I think, you know, there's just so much focus on negativity a lot of the time that it's, it becomes a little bit like voices in the wilderness, more or less. You know, everybody sounds the same. And so, you know, you just want to sound a little different. And I think this is at least our best attempt to do so.
Plus, it allows us some room to talk about the seriously awesome things that happen, which we'll get into with our number one best moment this week. It might be in my top five of the year when the year is said and done. But let's talk about our number five best moment of the week right now. And it's a tie. So talk about positivity. We're going full on six here. But it's a tie at number five, and it's two matches. Jeff Hardy versus Kurt Angle from Impact, tied with Randy Orton versus Dolph Ziggler on Raw. Which one do you want to tackle first?
I guess we can tackle Hardy versus Angle first, just because I think the match itself just kind of showcases what, you know, these two veterans can bring out of each other. I think Hardy has been kind of understated on TNA TV lately. He hasn't been really involved in main event storylines. And I think a lot of people kind of sleep on, you know, what exactly he's capable of. It's kind of easy to forget that it was just a few years ago that literally the guy was the hottest thing in wrestling. As the world heavyweight champion, you know, with in his feud with CM Punk you know, Angle, while he's, you know, not what he once was, is still, you know, one of the best workers in TNA you know, can still be talked about in the conversation as being one of the best around. So, you know, having them, you know, compete in a relatively lengthy TV match and show us kind of glimpses of what we all used to kind of expect from them, you know, was a pleasant surprise. And I think they both did themselves extremely well, and I thought the match, you know, with its, you know, it seemed like it had plenty of near falls. They seemed to work in, you know, quite a bit of situations that were plausible finishes, and I thought it was a great television match.
Yeah, I remember these two having a series in TNA in 2010 that I think was really underplayed for other matches that year. Their series of matches, I think most of which ended in draws, in one way or another, in 2010, actually, it kind of got overshadowed by the Jeff Hardy heel turn at Bound for Glory that year, and then Jeff Hardy's subsequent issues with, you know, with substances and everything that led to him leaving TNA for a while. I thought that this match showed just what they were capable of, just how good they can still be. And, you know, you've got Angle, who is one of the, you know, like you said, used to be the best worker in the world, most likely. Now, one of the best. It's, you know, he's gone down, but his quality is still better than probably 90% of wrestlers out there. And then you've got Jeff Hardy, who, especially with the right opponent, can do something compelling that gets the crowd emotionally involved, that allows people to buy in a big, big way. And they did that in this match. And there was something on the line there with the Bound for Glory series, with it being spelled out. The guy that loses this match is out of the Bound for Glory series. We've talked about it. I continue to praise TNA for the really nice work they've done with the Bound for Glory series this year, making it feel important, making each match feel like it has a place and it matters. and this was a great example of that paying off.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. And I think, Orton versus Ziggler was probably, right in that same caliber. We saw Orton and Ziggler the previous Friday, on SmackDown with Orton picking up a clean victory. And then we saw Orton do a little business for Ziggler on Monday, which was surprising. You know, I think everybody considered, Orton was going to roll through. You know, it didn't seem like the time or place for him to take a clean loss, but he did. I guess as clean as he healed him in WWE, and I appreciated the match quality as well. I thought it was a much better match than what we had seen on Friday. Even though that was in the main event, I thought they managed to work a much better pace, and I thought the finish was excellent. And I think WWE is giving Dolph Ziggler an earnest chance to line himself up to be world champion, and thus far he's held up his end of the deal with his performances. So, I'm kind of happy to see WWE taking that approach, and I don't think Orton loses anything here. He seems like he's pretty bulletproof, and he's heading off to do a movie soon. So, this will be a long lost memory by the time he makes his big return.
Talking about this loss that Orton was able to take, is it will be a memory by the time he returns. It will be just going, oh yeah, that did happen. Not, oh my God, Orton lost. I can't believe it. I can't believe in him now. It's something better than that. Orton and Ziggler really showed that they have great chemistry. And, Orton even said on Twitter when someone praised his match with Dolph Ziggler, heck, it's hard to have a bad one with Dolph. And that's what we're hearing over and over from wrestlers like Chris Jericho and other guys who have been in the ring with Dolph Ziggler lately, is it's basically impossible to have a bad match with the guy. And Ziggler continues to prove himself and continues to show why he is the Money in the Bank holder right now and why he deserves to have a world title reign at some point. This match will be forgotten in terms of Randy Orton's legacy, but Randy Orton's future. But I think it will be remembered in terms of Dolph Ziggler's future when people go, when he starts listing off the guys he's beat, when he starts saying, yeah, this is why I deserve to be world champion. I beat Randy Orton. I beat Chris Jericho, and so on and so forth. It really gives him a little ounce of legitimacy at no real cost to Randy Orton, to Chris Jericho, or any of those guys.
Yeah, Ziggler is on a trajectory that he, have been able to hold on to, moving up the WWE card, and, having these nice feathers in his cap as far as victories over major stars is great. But, I think the most telling thing about Ziggler is that he hasn't, he hasn't hiccuped yet. I mean, there hasn't been that blip. I mean, yeah, he's had a few stumbles in the ring with missed spots, but, that's everybody, and it happens all the time, so... It's hard to
Sin Cara for that.
Yeah, we can blame Sin Cara, but his trajectory has been steady. I mean, he's been remarkably consistent for a WWE performer,
and I think that speaks volumes about just what kind of a talent he is, and
the fact that other people are speaking up and recognizing that is
huge for him. And just
looking back over where he started, doing the whole caddy thing for Kerwin White, the Chavo Guerrero's failed character, the Spirit Squad.
I mean,
he's stuck with some really terrible stuff, and now due to his perseverance and hard work, he's probably going to end up being a world champion with another character that nobody gave a chance to succeed when he first appeared on television. So, it just goes to show you that sometimes talent can overcome the poor creativity of the WWE at times.
Dolph Ziggler debuted in 2008, and it was his whole gimmick was he introduces himself to people in the ring. I remember him having that year, actually having a really good match with Batista, but it started with him coming up and offering the handshake and going, "Hi, I'm Dolph Ziggler." Who thought, and I remember saying at the time, even if this kid ends up being great, his name is going to hold him back. And now Dolph Ziggler is a chill name. We're all okay with it. It's not, it's not Hulk Hogan or anything, but it's a really great you know, it works for him and for his character, and the whole character works at this point. And it's really, you know, it's a testament to Dolph Ziggler in being able to, you know, basically shine up whatever he's given Knife and go out there and work as hard as he can night after night to make it work. And that, you know, we talk about Orton versus Ziggler as a young guy getting to show what he's got. We talk about Hardy versus Angle as two veterans showing that they've still got it. Tied for our number five moment of the week, I think it's hard to, you know, pick one moment or one thing about this that was better than the other. Let's move on to number four. This one happened on Monday Night Raw, live from Chicago, and it was CM Punk deciding that he's going to take the night off. We asked going into this week, how are they going to get people to boo Punk? And the answer really was, they aren't. But how are they going to make Punk come up like a heel to the TV crowd still, you know, while Chicago is giving him a standing ovation? This was it right here. CM Punk deciding, hey, I'm going to take the night off. I've got a personal day, and I'm using it now, as he said backstage to AJ. I thought this was a really great piece of business. It played into what happened later in the show, which we will get to later in this show. And, you know, just it was a nice moment for Punk's new heel character, or, you know, kind of for Punk's evolved character to show what he's about in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I thought Punk, you know, was you know, nothing short of great on Monday. You know, the opening promo was very good. You know, with Sheamus, you know, the specific moment where he took the night off definitely accomplished what they set out for it to accomplish, which was to, you know, to generate some boos. And I think there was, you know, at least some boos in that Chicago crowd, even though they were, you know, they were rapidly pro CM Punk, which is expected in his hometown. But, you know, overall, I think Punk is doing a great job of defining, you know, his character and with what, you know, he's been given when you know, creatively. And Sheamus was in a complete no-win situation here. So I thought they, you know, they at least did their best to cast him in a decent light, you know, given the crowd hostility towards anybody who would have stood opposite CM Punk. So, you know, Punk deserves, you know, all the kudos in the world for, you know, actually doing something inventive, which was just outright refusing to take a match. And, you know, they rarely do that on WWE TV. And it also accomplished the goal of keeping him and Cena apart, you know, until the end of the evening. So I think they're doing a pretty wise thing with Punk and Cena by keeping them apart the way they are, just because I think this program is probably going to continue for several months. So giving away too much too early definitely would have damaged the story arc they're probably going for. So I'm liking this thus far, and I'm intrigued to see where it's going.
Yeah, and we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago with Punk and Cena. This program's probably going to, you know, through Night of Champions, to Hell in a Cell, and is it Hell in a Cell then Survivor Series? I wouldn't be shocked to see this one wrap up at Survivor Series, which, yes, I know it should wrap up at Hell in a Cell. People yelling at their phones or computers or other listening devices right now, I'm with you on that. But, you know, knowing that this program is going to go down that long road, you don't want Punk and Cena in a promo every week. You don't want them giving away some of the brilliance that dynamic creates on a weekly basis. You probably want to wait for it. You want to hand-pick it because it's going to mean more, you know, going into Hell in a Cell, and it's going to mean more going into Survivor Series. This was a really nice way, and, you know, they're still trying to solidify this Punk character, and, you know, it's still, you know, they're still finding their bearings with it, and I thought that this night was a great step in that direction with Punk deciding, got a personal day, using it. I'll see you folks on the other side. And it worked. Move on. Number three, best moment of the week. This was a major course correction for TNA and a necessary one, I felt. It was Austin Aries on TNA Impact in the opening and closing segments of the show as the central focus. It was Aries coming out and addressing what Aces and Apes did to him, cutting the promo, saying, I'm not cleared to wrestle, but I can fight. And it was Aries actually, you know, challenging the biggest, baddest member of Aces and Apes in the final segment and starting to get the best of him when the Aces and Apes ran in. I thought this was a great use of Aries. and put him front and center in the Aces and Eights drama. It showed where the world champion should be in all of this mess. I just felt like it worked really well for, you know, for TNA, for this story, and for Austin Aries as a character.
Yeah, I mean, Aries is, has shown, you know, a lot of resilience, and especially, you know, since gaining the title, you know, a lot more relatability and charisma to TNA crowds. I think his he's hit a very good spot with his current character. You know, he's extremely relatable. He seems kind of like he has a blue-collar work ethic, things that appeal to wrestling fans from babyface wrestlers. So, and this this show... you know, kind of showcased that a bit. You know, he showed he's willing to fight hurt. He's willing to, you know, to take on, you know, larger, big dog type wrestlers, even though he's, you know, he would be considered one of, you know, a smaller competitor. I mean, he was the X Division champion. And, you know, I think that works. I think it's a great character for him, you know, underdogs, despite the fact that, you know, Aries is the world champion. I mean, a lot of times, even in the face of a larger wrestler, you know, no matter who's champion, the smaller guy always seems like the underdog. And I think he's playing into that pretty well. And TNA showcasing that, you know, he can get the better of larger wrestlers, and he's willing to fight hurt, and him giving charismatic promos, it's going to carry him a long way, because I think that's exactly what they were looking for in a babyface champion. So this was a very good episode of Impact for Aries.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that this solidified him as what people are looking for in a babyface champion, and that is so important in wrestling to say, no, this guy's willing to do it all. Look at him. He's fighting hurt. Look at him. You know, he's willing to go out there and fight. By the way, who sold an arm injury worse, Austin Aries or Triple H?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. You know, I think Triple H walking out
fast.
With I know, but the appearing, who was it, Manny Pacquiao that he appeared with, like, the Saturday after his arm injury? So I think you got to give it to Triple
Something
H
like
for ignoring the cast.
I don't know, because Austin Aries came out with his arm in, like, a black sleeve, and just and it's just like, it's kind of hurt. Goes on to, like, he doesn't punch anyone with it, but raise the belt with it and do all of that. I'm torn here on who's telling it worse. I mean, Triple H cut his hair because his arm was broken the second time. But, you know, it's I think it might be a tie for worst arm injury selling between Triple H and Austin Aries. I think they have that in common. Maybe they could go to a class of some sort on selling, you know, horrific arm injuries inflicted by kimuras and steel chairs. It's an upper division class in wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, they got to talk to some, you know, farm accident victims, or bring in some industrial workers or something. I don't know. Somebody can tell them how to sell an arm injury.
Right?
You would think.
It's funny stuff. But, yeah, Aries had a really good episode of Impact, despite, you know, our mockery of his selling of his arm injury. One other thing I found funny, you know, following kind of the wrestling folk on Twitter and all that, people were outraged when Triple H appeared at a non-WWE event not selling the arm injury. I didn't hear a lot of people complaining about how Austin Aries sold the arm injury. One of those, yep, internet favorite versus, you know, internet Satan moments where you just kind of look and go, oh, wrestling fans, I love you guys.
Yeah, you only take pot shots to the people that you didn't like to begin with, I think, is the general rule.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on, because I'm excited to talk about this next one. And our number two best moment of the week came in the closing segment of Monday Night Raw, and it was Paul Heyman sticking his head out of CM Punk's car window. I mean, really just the entire last minute of Raw, with CM Punk delivering the go-to-sleep on the car, and then driving off with Heyman sticking his head out the car window and looking at John Cena. That was crazy. That, you know, people were talking about, you know, is Paul Heyman going to do more than just hang out with Brock Lesnar? And most people figured he wouldn't, and WWE wouldn't want him to. And then you have Paul Heyman showing up with CM Punk I'm really intrigued and interested to see where this one's going. You know, it's one of those moments that makes you say, I can't really wait for Raw next week. I am so psyched to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting because the first thing that popped into my head when Heyman stuck his head out of the window was last year's Survivor Series, where they, you know, where they had the tag match to close the show with the Miz and R-Truth taking on The Rock and John Cena, and I thought, I wonder if they're trying to set up Punk and Lesnar versus Cena and Triple H at Survivor Series, because that's kind of what kind of popped into my head. Well, maybe they're going to try to further these WrestleMania stories in a big way, and you know, really try to amp them up before you know, we get into 2013 and the actual earnest build up to WrestleMania. So that was my first thought. Well, maybe that's where they're heading, and because Punk really doesn't need somebody to talk for him. You know, if anything, you know, Heyman could be his advisor or you know, something like that in that role to try to you know, flesh out this new heel character, you know, try to give him a different type of motivation than what we had been seeing for Punk. But you know, I'm thinking this has to be, you know, something that's going to, you know, be just kind of the simmer for the long term build towards WrestleMania, maybe setting up that tag match that I mentioned before.
Yeah, I agree. Punk doesn't need someone to talk for him. But what I like about the Heyman choice is Heyman's a dude, you know, and we've seen it, he can get fans to hate people, like legitimately hate people. Heyman is so evil, and he's so, you know, he just comes off as so diabolical. And, you know, right now he's doing some of the best promo work of his career in the corner of Brock Lesnar. So why not, you know, if he's willing to go on the road and, you know, take the money from WWE, why not offer him some cash to hang out and, you know, do the stuff with CM Punk he's doing as well, because you know it's a talent that Heyman really believes in. I could totally see a tag team match between, you know, Triple H and John Cena versus Brock Lesnar and CM Punk in Survivor Series. I think it writes itself, really, with, you know, Triple H or with John Cena going, I need your help. Maybe Lesnar and Punk are, you know, kind of, you know, Lesnar's kind of helping out Punk a little bit and helping to dominate him. John Cena needs the help, and he knows a guy who wants vengeance on Brock Lesnar. It, you know, it writes itself. It would be compelling TV and really fun to watch play out. You know, that's a great situation for John Cena and Triple H to be in as a babyface duo. I think you're going to get a great match out of those four, no doubt. I think Lesnar in a tag match could actually help him as far as covering some of the weaknesses that he has in the ring as a performer at this moment. I like the story, and I just really like the surprise. It caught a lot of people off guard, and I think leads to, you know, a fun couple of weeks on Raw. Even, you know, suddenly Night of Champions is that much more interesting if you think that, hey, CM Punk might be accompanied to the ring by Paul Heyman. That makes the Night of Champions match, I would say, at least two times more interesting than just Cena versus Punk was before.
Yeah, you know, and Heyman doesn't really even have to get involved in the match. I mean, just his presence at ringside, you know, will create tension. And you know, because he didn't really get involved in the Triple H and Lesnar match at all. But the you know, it's interesting that there's, you know, they built a lot of history
here, whether it was planned or not. You know, you have Punk talking about being a Heyman guy both on WWE TV and on Twitter on numerous occasions, and then you have you know, Triple H and Punk having that match last year where Triple H beat Punk, and then you have
All the stuff they've been doing with both Lesnar and Cena,
and Lesnar and Triple H, and Punk
and Cena have a long history. So,
I mean, you have a lot of these parallels happening at the same time. So, I mean, if they can manage to intertwine
all these characters at once,
I think they can make this story a lot more interesting than it would have been had they just done a straight, you know, Punk and Cena match. And, you know, and heading towards the Survivor Series, you know, depending on how quickly they want to, you know, put Lesnar back on television or Triple H back on television, I think they can, you know, they can really generate you know, a great storyline heading into that show, which has been disappointing, you know, but as far as buy rates go for several years now. So anything to give give these shows a little bit of extra interest, you know, has to be compelling for WWE, considering, you know, The Rock coming back for Survivor Series last year only boosted them, I think it was like a couple hundred thousand buys, which, you know, probably was not what they were expecting. So anything, anything over the top like this where you can have four, you know, major superstars and get crossover from MMA fans and, you know, people who are interested to see, you know, Triple H and what his retirement stuff is going to mean. You know, it's there's a lot of good stuff going on right now revolving all four of these guys, and I think they can exploit it to their advantage.
Okay, here's the biggest Triple H question I've got for you. I think it's the most important question I could ask about Triple H right now. Are we going to see video packages of him cutting his hair while watching his match with Brock Lesnar with sad music playing in the background?
Sad music, like what? Like the closing theme from The Hulk, where it's just the sad, lonely man music, where he's walking away.
Maybe some like Damian Rice or something, just like. You know, something really, I'm thinking like singer-songwriter, acoustic, just sad guy crying on his guitar as Triple H cuts his hair and watches himself tap out to the Kimura.
Yeah, the parallel with The Undertaker
shaving his head is kind of interesting, too, just how they've, you know, that it's kind of already been done.
And I don't know how much of a storyline.
How much of a storyline thing they're going to make out of the haircut, but, you know, it does seem to fit, you know, his corporate personality more. So maybe, I don't know.
Maybe it has nothing.
It had nothing to do with
the storyline and everything to do with, you know, him wanting to look more business and, you know, because a 40-some-year-old
man with long flowing hair, you know, just doesn't scream corporate executive, but they can probably turn it into something storyline wise. And you're right. It would be, you know, an interesting video package to see them, you know, showing him getting his hair cut, even if they had this leather wig on and do it real fake style for a video package.
I doubt they filmed the original haircut, so let's just put a preposterous lion's mane on Triple H and have him shave the damn thing.
Now, I will say Triple H had great hair. I mean, for a guy over 40 to have hair that thick and that, you know, that shiny, at his age, it's remarkable. I really think Triple H got tired of flat ironing his hair most mornings. I think this comes from, you know, he just said, guys, I can't do this anymore. Can I please cut my hair? It doesn't look good unless I flat iron it.
Yeah, you know, he probably took like an extra 45 minutes in the bathroom, and Stephanie was getting impatient with him. So, yeah, I could see that happening too.
So let's move on to our number one best moment of the week. And I'm kind of happy that we're doing All Access on a week where we have this as number one, because I think it shows number one best moment of the week for us. We're not talking about drawing money, although this would. We're not talking about, you know, kind of the businessy aspect of wrestling. We're talking about what we enjoyed most as fans a lot of times. And I can tell you, I don't know if there's a segment this year, like a non-wrestling segment this year, that I have enjoyed as much as I enjoyed Daniel Bryan and Kane for being forced to hug it out.
I laughed out loud in my living room throughout this entire segment, because I think the anger management stuff actually kind of fed into this quite nicely. And you could tell by the options they proposed when they had everybody vote on it that hug it out was going to be number one. I think they're going interesting directions with both of these characters. It doesn't seem like this feud, you know, is going to result in either of them getting propelled back into the main event right away. But this is a very fun diversion for both of these guys. And the hug itself, you know, just with how, you know, emotionally in touch with themselves they've kind of been getting throughout this anger management stuff, it just made the whole thing all the more awkward when they kind of, you know, did
the tilting, tugging, kind of not knowing what to do, masculine stupidity that it comes from men trying to figure out how to hug each other. So
I thought the whole thing was extremely well done.
I really actually enjoyed Kane's work in the anger management sessions. I think Brian has been good too, but I think Kane has kind of been shown as the better dry comedian of the two. And, you know, I
kind of interested to see how it concludes, even though, you know, I think we've seen all that Kane and Brian can really do in the ring together. The storyline itself has been a lot of fun.
So here's my question for you. When you know, we do our .NET end-of-the-year awards and the ballot comes out, do you feel like this will be your vote for Hug of the Year? And what, if not, what hug do you think could top it?
I think there is no hug that can top it. This is by far the greatest wrestling hug of the year.
There it is. There it is, people. A Hug of the Year contender. Pretty much a Hug of the Year instant winner on Monday Night Raw this week. I don't see how anything else could have been our number one. I will say the one thing about this angle that makes me a little sad, I want to see them as a tag team now. I think that Daniel Bryan and Kane, if you look at it, look at their position on the card, and look at how, you know, yeah, they're upper mid-card, but they're not in the title hunt right now. They've kind of exhausted their title opportunities with current champions. You know, Bryan had a series with Sheamus and then had a series almost immediately afterwards with Punk, and there's people ahead of them in there. Same thing, Kane has had shots at both world titles while they've been held by the current guys. Let's just take them, you know, let's just take them completely out of those equations, put the tag belts on them, and let Daniel Bryan and Kane, you know, be anger management, be a team that, you know, is calming each other down and keeping each other relaxed until the rage finally flows from them. I think it could be a fun gimmick for fans. I think that the two of them have developed a really fun comedic chemistry together, and not that I think the tag belts should go on a comedic tag team, but come on, they're on Kofi Kingston and R-Truth right now. We can do better, people. As a nation, we should demand better tag team champions. And I truly believe that the tag team champions we deserve are Daniel Bryan and Kane hugging on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I mean, either that or just have them fail spectacularly every time they go out there for a tag team match. I mean, that would almost be just as good. I mean, I don't know. You don't even need to put the belts on them. Just have them be so close to victory until one of them just has a complete meltdown. You know, that you could have that be just as entertaining as somebody, you know, as another singles team holding a tag belt.
I agree. And bonus for Daniel Bryan and Kane, their outfits already match. Think about that.
Yeah, they really do.
They already wear complementary colors. They'd be fun on that front. Now, I have to say this. This was a TV hug. Do you feel like if they would have waited, saved this hug for pay-per-view and given it a little more time, it would have been a better hug?
If they would have spent a little bit more time on it, sure. I mean, I think if you would have put this as a stipulation, like if there was an opportunity to vote for a hug at every one of these WWE polls, it would win every time. I mean, it was
seriously.
It's a great opportunity for comedy.
Now let's talk about the other great wrestling hugs, even this decade. I mean, did this top the Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels hug that kicked off the decade in 2010?
Ooh. A lot of emotion tied to that one. I mean, if you're looking for a comedic value, this one's definitely tops. But if you're looking for people actually, you know, hugging it out and burying a hatchet, you gotta give the edge to Hart and Michaels, I would think.
I almost give the edge to Hart and Michaels. Seemed a little awkward. I feel like there was a little bit of a moment there, but I feel like more of a moment between Hart and Michaels probably happened backstage after that moment. Like, it was cool to see them hug on TV, but I feel like the real moment was probably backstage and over the next few months as things kind of thawed out between them. I think I give the edge to Kane and Bryan on that one. And am I missing any great wrestling hugs? Now, did The Rock hug?
I'm trying to think if I'm imagining this or not, but did Hogan and Warrior hug after their match at WrestleMania 6?
I think they did. I believe Hogan and Warrior did hug.
I think that might be the most awkward hug in wrestling history, if you look back on it, just because of how much they literally did not like each other, it would seem.
True. You know what? I'm going to see your Hogan and Warrior, and I'm going to raise you a Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff hug.
Oh, yeah. That one was pretty ugly. They both look kind of clammy. I don't know. Very, very awkward hug for sure. Trying to think. That's probably the only really awkward one I remember off the top of my head, with Hogan and Warrior being super awkward.
Oh, why are we doing a countdown this week when we obviously had enough material to just do the top five best and bottom three worst wrestling hugs of all time?
We could probably do that next week if you wanted to. Just throw out the normal format and just do all hug Thursday or something.
I don't know if Jason would be okay with it, but man, I think it could be one of the best editions of the countdown ever.
I'm with you.
Maybe we should do a meta show when we hit, like, 2 years next year. Maybe we should do a meta show where we count down editions of the countdown.
Yeah, that would be – that would force us to listen to all of our old shows, though, and that would be brutal.
Oh, God, no. I don't like listening to us when I'm editing, like, the conference call stuff out of the show. That's not enjoyable. You're right. Let's not do that. Forget that. Let's move on to the worst of the week. Number three worst moment of the week. This one, it's kind of a recap. Actually, you know, before we get into the worst of the week, Jake, let's go ahead and sell them on .NET membership because it's awesome. If you like audio, which you're listening to a wrestling podcast right now, you probably do, unless you're someone's wife that's in the room while we're doing this, in which case, dude, turn off the podcast. Spend time with your lady. If you like audio, .NET's a great place to be. We've got weekly audio updates. The .NET Weekly Show with the news of the week. Jason Powell and Short break news in that show. Discuss a ton of really interesting stuff. Analyze it. It's great. You've got Jake and I doing the .NET countdown every week, which, as you can see, is the most distraction-driven wrestling show you're going to find anywhere. That's a good sell. You've also got weekly recaps of Raw, SmackDown, Impact. You've got pay-per-view recaps, .NET exclusive interviews. We've had Kevin Steen on recently. We've had a former WWE creative member, Court Bauer. Great interviews that you're going to get. Some other guys that really have a lot of great stuff to say about the wrestling business. You're going to find it on the wrestling.net member side. On top of that, you get ad-free access to the site. You get access to the .NET members forum where you can interact with me, Jake, Jason, Chris, Ryan Kester, and a whole host of awesome .NET members on, you know, as part of that forum. And you get it for the price of $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out for a month. But if you take the annual option, it comes out to $5.50 a month. It saves you about $20 over a year, or $24 over a year. It is a great value in wrestling website membership if you're that kind of guy. And if you're not, become that kind of guy. Be a stand-up guy. Pay the man. Anything to add to that plug, Jake?
Send more money. No, I'm just kidding. It really is a great value. It is a great value in you know, as far as wrestling websites go. I was a member to a bunch, before I came to .NET. And as far as, you know, original audio content and the amount of time, that people put into the website, ourselves included, but mostly Jason and Chris who do the day-to-day news operation. It's quite an undertaking to actually develop contacts and break news to you guys. So it's if you are interested in getting this stuff and getting the first run stuff, which is only really available on the .NET Weekly podcast, you got to become a member. And it's not expensive, and I think you'll get a lot of rewards out of it. I know, I was a member for quite a while before I started contributing, and it's been a great value for me. So that's
same
that.
Here. I was a member for a long time before I came on board as a staff member. And if you are interested, head over to prowrestling.net. There's a membership link on the right hand side of the page. Just click on that bad boy, enter your information, and boom, instant access. It's pretty great. So now, let's move on to the worst moments of the week. Number three, it's almost a recap from what we said last week, but we're going to talk about the gut check judging segment because it was so embarrassing to Chris Louie, and it's so kind of insulting towards that dude, and hey, here's your wife and your baby. It's like they tried to build the best song story possible just to be like, hell no, we're not hiring you.
Yeah, I was kind of uncomfortable kind of watching that segment. You know, it was the I just felt bad for the guy. You know, they brought his wife and his kid in, and you know, they're sitting right front row when he's getting kind of dressed down by the judges. And you know, I guess Taz did a decent job of breaking it to him somewhat tactfully, where you know he said he's got a great heart and a great story, but he's just not ready for Impact Wrestling. But you know, if you're everybody knows this stuff is a work. Obviously, you know, Joey Ryan's involvement kind of gave that whole thing away. So, you know, and I understand they want to, you know, to bring great stories to television, but why not you know, wait until this guy is ready before you bring him on to television and you know, embarrass him in front of his family. You know, obviously this is the guy's dream. It just seemed kind of heartless to exploit the guy's story only to step on him, you know, right at the last moment there. So I felt really bad for the guy. Hopefully he keeps his chin up and you know, keeps trying or moves on to a more productive career and actually is able to provide for his family, because it sounds like he's struggling.
Those video packages literally made it seem like if I don't get hired as a professional wrestler, I'm going to have to turn to a life of crime. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Are those really the options? I mean, I know the employment situation out there is rough, but it's like pro wrestling or life of crime. That's, as a society, I think we're better than that. And Impact really did not show that as a society we are better than that. It was sad to see this dude just get dressed down, borderline humiliated, and all of these things happen right in front of his wife and his little baby kid. And, you know, they showed him having, like, 7 or 8 kids in video packages. That was strange. I don't know if the actual number was 7 or 8, guys, but it was a lot of kids. I just feel like this was a poor use of gut check, and it's like, in reality, aren't these supposed to be people that they think could have a shot that are coming in? Like, shouldn't they be saying, you know, Al Snow, who's a trainer down in OVW, shouldn't he be going, I've seen this guy, he works really well, I think it's time we gave him a gut check on the TNA stage. And just, you know, left it at that and let him go and see if he should, you know, with the way I guess gut check work, continue his developmental career after a match on live TV. This was a sad segment, and I, like you said, I just felt bad for Chris Louie at the end of it, who, you know, they did everything they could to give this guy a sob story. Sorry, that's my dog barking in the background. She's adorable. They did everything they could to give this guy a sob story, and then they just said, yeah, but he sucks.
Yeah, it really did feel like they, you know, this was all kind of a foregone conclusion which way they were going to go, which makes the exploitation of the story, you know, all the more kind of depressing in a way. But, you know, I wish him the best. You know, I don't wish ill on anyone. But maybe pro wrestling isn't the best career path for him, you know, if it's not making enough money to feed his family. You know, I know it's a dream, but maybe it's a dream you can put off until you're in a better spot in your life.
Yeah, does it make it sound like jerks to say, hey, maybe think about providing for your family before training as a wrestler? You know, responsibility and all that, it's important stuff. That's, you know, and we're sitting, I don't know, the segments were just strange, and now they've led to us judging someone's life choices, which I never like doing, unless it's a close personal friend, then I want to judge their life choices all I can. Let's move on to the number 2 worst moment of the week, AJ's freakout on Raw. They've been building to this for a couple weeks, but it still just felt so strange, and it left me going, if this is what you're going to do with the AJ character, why did you make her GM in the first place?
Yeah, that's kind of what surprised me. You know, this first couple of weeks as GM, she kind of played it straight. That kind of threw some ice on the crazy. But now, you know, they seem to be going back to it because, you know, if they think she's the problem with the ratings and you know, the lack of AJ crazy is what it led to, you know, the reduction in their ratings since we went to a 3-hour Raw, I think they're crazy. You know, I don't think that's an accurate, you know, representation of what the problems are with the product. But
I was more in this segment. I was more creeped out by Vicky's cackling than anything AJ did. That was beyond creepy. But I don't really know where they're going. If they're already going to pull the plug on AJ as GM, I think that's a mistake. You know, I don't even think they gave her much of a fair shot. The writing for her hasn't been all that great. You know, she does deliver decent performances when she's asked to go out there and act crazy. But I don't know what more they think they're going to get out of it. I think they kind of played out the whole AJ is nuts thing with the when they, you know, kind of overdid it with the main event storyline she was a part of. So I was hoping they'd kind of tame her down a little bit when she became GM, but now it seems like they're ramping it back up to try to pull off another rating stunt.
Yeah, it's like they said, man, we need a little more crazy on the show. And it's not, I think the fun thing about AJ in the Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and Kane story was she was kind of a charming kind of crazy. Like, she was the kind of crazy that we've all had ex-girlfriends be, and we're like, man, they were crazy. But kind of fun, you know, kind of the good crazy. And now AJ does not seem like kind of the good crazy at all. That's the weird thing, is she seems like the holy crap, you're actually insane, not the you're cute crazy. And, you know, being the sexist jerks that we all are, we want to see the you're cute crazy. That's the crazy that we fell for in the beginning. And we don't, this different variety of crazy is kind of, you know, it's harshing our buzz, if you will.
Yeah, it isn't doing much for me. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, obviously, but it's not the type of angle that I enjoy a GM being involved in. I'm kind of the person that would prefer, you know, bring back zombie Jack Tunney or something. You know, just somebody that doesn't bring up a whole lot of TV time. You know, I don't care what they, you know, what they do, you know, as far as a figurehead on the show, as long as it's not sucking up hours of television. And I feel like AJ, you know, would have fit decently into that role because she can, you know, she could have subtle interactions with wrestlers that would have, and her, you know, her deviousness would have led to interesting matches on television. But if, you know, if they're making a storyline just about her, I'm really not all that interested in it if she's going to be in a spot as a general manager.
Okay, you just spoke to the most brilliant storyline of the last 5 years. Zombie Jack Tunney. I mean, first of all, zombies are huge right now. The Walking Dead, you know, it's a great show. People are into it. Zombies are at the forefront of pop culture. Now is the time. Zombie Jack Tunney needs to come into WWE and want brains in fair championship matches.
Yeah, if they could, just have him, backstage in inside of a cage or something, and they just put a microphone up to his mouth whenever he has to make a match. You know, it would be hilarious.
Oh. We someone needs to Photoshop us as Zombie Jack Tunney and put it in the .NET members forum. This needs to happen. Finally, let's get into the number one worst moment of the week. And this one's been building for me for a couple weeks, and it's just started to be annoying. Hey, Jake, have you watched the Santino match lately? Because the Cobra is his penis, and that's supposed to be funny.
Yeah, I totally didn't get that until you pointed that out. Thank you. I think this is the dumbest thing they've done with Santino ever, and that's saying something because they've done some ridiculous things with Santino. But you know, usually Santino does kind of charming humor. This is just not even close to that. I mean, I get it. They're trying to involve Oksana in the feud, and his Cobra, obviously has a mind of its own, har har. But, the way that it's played out in the ring has just been silly. I mean, he did the Cobra move without the glove on, and it had absolutely no effect on Antonio Cesaro in the match. It was just like, oh, really? Like, oh, all right. Yeah, I mean, I get it. Santino's hammy, and we're all supposed to laugh at how ridiculous he is, but on a PG show, him trying to emulate talking to his penis just doesn't seem all that PG to me.
I don't even care about it being a PG show. Like, if they ran this angle in the Attitude Era, which I'm sure they did something similar with Val Venus at some point, but if they ran this angle back when they were at their height of not PG and Val Venus had some sort of white substance sprayed on his T-shirt, it still would be bad. Like, it still doesn't, you know, it still does not make for a good, compelling wrestling angle. It's dumb. You know, in the end, it's just a dumb angle. And I really am tired, you know, I'm tired of it. If this is where Santino comedy has gone, I guess I'm tired of that too. He can be really funny, but this whole cobra penis thing he's doing is the opposite of really funny. It's just really dumb.
It would almost be better if it was the other way around. Like, if the cobra was trying to win matches and Santino was the one that was distracted, that I could almost get behind. Like, if the cobra was trying to be the voice of reason and Santino was constantly pushing it away, I think that would be a lot funnier than than what we're getting right now.
Dick, that is far less phallic than it should be.
I guess. I'm not built for this show, I guess.
Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for the countdown this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you very much for, you know, checking out ProWrestling.net, whether you do so on the free side, the paid side, on the app, which is fantastic, available in your finer app stores everywhere. Thank you for checking out ProWrestling.net. We appreciate each and every person that looks at the site. But we just appreciate our members more. Right, Jake?
Absolutely. Members first.
Thank you, guys, and have a good week.